England Conservatory of Music and fifth grade music students meet with the Juno World Affairs Council. Great Conversations features journalists Ahmed Rashid and Clarissa Ward at 9. Great Decisions in Foreign Policy is at 10 with Platts Energy Week, BioCentury this week, and BBC News Night following. It's a great public affairs lineup tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Hey, good afternoon, Juno. It's just coming up on 3 o'clock. There it is, right there, 3 o'clock. And you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juno Afternoon. I've got a great lineup of guests for us to interview and talk to, find out for things from. Katie Bosler is going to come in from the university to tell us about course registrations for the spring semesters. There is a book signing this weekend on December 14th. Ishmael Hope has a new collection of poetry called The Courtesans of Flounder Hill, and he'll tell us about that. Michaela Levy has opened a place here in town that is going to cater to expectant mothers and mothers of young children. And that is called Fiddlehead and Ferns, and she'll come on to tell us about that. The Hollywood Skating Recital is Sunday, December 14th at 2:30 at Treadwell Ice Arena. We'll find out about that. And Christy Chambor will be here to tell us about the KTOO auction. Right now, it's time for National Native News. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Some lawmakers say appropriations for tribes are included in the budget agreement passed by the U.S. House late Thursday. Matt Laszlo has more from Washington.
Nobody got everything they wanted from the deal to avert a government shutdown. But Oklahoma Republican Congressman Tom Cole says tribes make out well from the deal.
Substantially more money in here than the administration requested for Indian health and for school construction on Indian reservations. So there are certainly some things in here that I share some of the concerns my friends have, both from a process standpoint and an outcome standpoint. But I think you have to make a balance. I think you have to look at the overall bill.
And Maryland Democratic Senator Barbara Mikulski says the legislation also provides tribes more tools to fight sexual predators.
This legislation has $430 million here for the Violence Against Women Act. It is the all-time high.
The legislation only funds the Department of Homeland Security and Immigration Enforcement Agencies until February. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Monday, December 15th is the deadline to register for care in 2015 under the Affordable Care Act. Health officials are urging Native people to apply. Charles Michael Ray reports.
Native Americans can receive health care through the Indian Health Service. This is part of the federal government's treaty and trust responsibility with tribal nations. But the head of the IHS says Native people should also sign up for health coverage under the Affordable Care Act. Dr. Yvette Rubideau is the acting director of the Indian Health Service and a Rosebud Sioux tribal member.
Our resources are limited and that sometimes we can't provide all of the care that a patient needs. And so an extra benefit that's available is the Affordable Care Act, and patients can choose to go and see what their benefits are, and they might find out that they could get really inexpensive health insurance.
Rubideau says low-income individuals may qualify for coverage under the Affordable Care Act at little or no cost. She says those already covered by the Indian Health Service can also receive a waiver that will exclude them from tax penalties for not signing up under ACA. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
An ice fisherman in southwest Alaska was surprised to hook a silver salmon as he fished for pike. KYUK's Charles Enoch has more.
Most fishermen have at least one story of the one that got away. Eek resident Floyd Earle has a story with a different outcome from a recent trip up the Eek River. On the ice fishing trip last Friday, Earle says he caught a couple of pikes, then dropped his jigging line into a hole, hoping for a third pike, but he got something else.
I felt something really jerk hard, and I was thinking, holy cow, I got a big pike. And I pulled it up, and I looked at it, and it was a silver salmon. I was just surprised and said, holy cow, look what I got.
Roll says the silver salmon was turned pink by the fresh water but was in good condition, only fatter. The majority of silver salmon swim up the Kuskokwim to spawn in August, but United States Fish and Wildlife biologist Lewis Coggins says some run late.
There are quite a few examples where coho salmon will be found spawning late into November and even into December.
Coggan says the areas that support later salmon runs are springs or upwellings in the river, saying these places tend to stay warmer than other areas. He also says there haven't been enough studies around the Eek River to know for sure why the silver was running so late. Roll said his friends and family members were extremely surprised, having never seen a freshly caught silver or coho salmon in December. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the 5th Annual Native American Training Institute, April 12th. Information on services and the NATI event at ahcnm.org.
Kawanak Broadcast Corporation is accepting artwork and reservations for the Alaska Native Art Auction, February 26th in Anchorage, Alaska. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. Proceeds benefit Kawanak's news programming. Learn more at knba.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Southeast Alaska Organization for Animals will be hosting their second annual silent auction on December 13th from 6 to 9 p.m. upstairs at the Viking Lounge on Front Street. A live DJ will provide entertainment while guests browse the many items and desserts donated by local businesses and residents. This is a family-friendly event, and everyone is welcome, including children, until 9 p.m. This auction will go to support the continued rescue and rehoming of animals throughout Alaska.
Hey, it's 6.5 minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Some people have really busy schedules. About 30 seconds ago.
We're chronically late.
But guess who arrived in the studio? Thank heavens, because otherwise we would not be able to learn what we need to know here about the spring 2015 class schedule at UAS. Welcome, my dear Katie Bosler.
Oh, good afternoon, Pat. Good to be here.
Yeah. So you're going to offer some courses this spring.
Huh? Yes. That's what we do at the University of Alaska Southeast. Yeah, we offer courses and classes and programs. And in case you haven't seen it yet, folks, we have our spring 2015 class schedule course listing out. It was inserted in the Capital City Weekly last Wednesday. That wouldn't be this past Wednesday, but the one before that, the 3rd of December. And this is where we have our A to Z, if there is a Z in our courses, listing from accounting all the way through welding. And we also have our e-learning classes, of course. Did you know, Pat, that about half of our classes are offered via e-learning?
As a matter of fact, I do, because I used to teach some of them. And
okay.
So I have actually been out there and doing this. It is exciting to know. I believe you can get a business degree from the University of Alaska Southeast without ever attending a class on campus.
To my knowledge, that is correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think there's a couple of other programs that are possible as well.
And another factoid.
Yeah.
Did you know that Sitka and Ketchikan UAS campuses offer more e-learning classes than any other UA campus in the whole state of Alaska?
I didn't know exactly how many it was, but I did know from my experience when I was working up on campus that many, many students who had trouble getting the courses they needed for a semester got smart and figured out that it was possible to pull the course online from Ketchikan or Sitka.
Yes.
And add it to their UAS. They were going to Juneau, but they could add a course from Sitka or Ketchikan, take it by correspondence, and add it to their semester schedule if the course had filled up or they had a conflict in trying to take another course at the same time it was offered or something like that.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of our Juneau students who also, you know, take the odd class from Sitka or Ketchikan, which leads me to we are really trying to remind people that I know there's a lot of you out there who you might be working for the state, you might be really busy and comfortable and you're satisfied with your life, but you have those last few credits to finish up that degree, that college degree. Often it's a bachelor's degree. And we are gearing up and we're ready for you to come back And a lot of these classes that you might think, oh, I just don't have time for, you can take via e-learning. You can take online at your convenience.
There are two other good programs that are interesting as well because they're graduate-level programs in the Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
I think the math specialty is entirely online, if I'm right, and a couple of others. So not only is this the people
business,
who are trying to
yeah.
finish up a bachelor's degree, but someone who's a couple of credits short on a master's,
right.
it's entirely possible
right.
that could be
yeah.
done
or,
online.
Or if you're a teacher and you yes. want to be you want to get into administration or you want to specialize, get that certificate in mathematics or reading, you can do that online as well. So lots of options. But we just want to let people know that registration is open, and you can either check out our course listing. It's a really a beautiful job here by our graphic artist, Allison Krein. Or you can just go online and go to uas.alaska.edu/schedule, and you can see all that we have to offer. I do want to let people know that, speaking of the web, Emily Wall, our published poet and wonderful English and creative writing teacher at UAS, will be teaching a web-based English class, and that is an introduction to creative writing. It's English 261, and a lot. You know, we're all storytellers, and many of us, whether we know it or not or acknowledge it or not, are natural writers, and Emily is teaching a class in Introduction to Creative Writing, so I would highly recommend that. And if you want more information about that, you know, you can just go online, or you can give the university a call. And the general number for course registration or questions is 796-6100 here in Juneau.
Now, lest we should give the impression from our earlier discussion of all of the online possible offerings,
mm-hmm.
the University of Alaska Southeast is also a resident institution, and you have even now, the first time in our history here, you have an on-campus dormitory that houses, I think, primarily freshmen.
Yes, the freshman residence hall.
If you have not seen this building, you ought to conduct tours of the building. I mean, windows look out over the lake. And
it's incredible.
Is amazing.
Have you been in there?
No, I haven't been inside.
Ah,
but
you gotta come in.
I can tell you what it looks like up there because I watched it being built.
Yeah.
And the sight line is just incredible. I have no idea how a student would ever pass classes because instead of studying when you went home at night, you would just stare out the window and go gaga at the glacier. Like
it's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous.
And it's very exciting, Pat. This is work. I guess we're completing now our first semester with these on-campus students, and they've really formed a real community on campus. We have some students very engaged in student clubs and activities, and the Residence Hall Facebook page, and it's really cool to, I've been out there now for 7 years, to see this happening, to have students on campus and just like invested in this community.
Yeah, there's always been housing at the University of Alaska up on the hill, but it was it's always been isolated from the campus in many ways. And now the campus is like this new vibrant freshman environment that is going to make the university different.
It's really fun.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so much good happening out at the University of Alaska. We had the art department on here last Friday, and we talked about some of the courses that that they're offering and like that. So it's an ongoing possibility, both of completing a degree, just doing some continuing education to spice up your life and maybe find a new skill or something like that.
Yeah, well, one skill that you might want to take on is a language skill, and you know that UAS is really at the forefront of Alaska Native language revitalization with Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian courses. You can take those on campus or, again, via e-learning. Though I'd highly recommend if you're in Juneau coming out to campus and becoming part of the language learning community. They are just having a blast. And there's potlucks, and they share wonderful food. And that's the other thing that's been so cool is, you know, of course, Alaska Native languages have been offered at UAS for many years, but there's just a real interest and resurgence and in Alaska Native languages, and it's just very, very exciting.
It's a very exciting campus and a very exciting place, and this year we'll see a number of milestones. It's going to be, I think there's going to be at least some major ceremony when the chancellor changes place. That's going to be a big shift in the history of the university.
Yeah, boy.
John Pugh has been chancellor for, well, he's been a part
since
of the university.
He's been at the university since 1987.
Uh-huh.
And I think he'd been chancellor for approximately 18 years, yeah. Something like that.
So there are bound to be some changes there. And
yes.
Everyone, I think, will be, you know, saddened to see John go, but also hoping John well in his next major endeavor. I'm sure he'll pop up to the surface doing something else exciting and wonderful. The guy is kind of like the Energizer Bunny.
You're not kidding. Now, we are going to miss him, so it's a little bittersweet there coming up on our last semester with Chancellor Pugh.
Indeed. So, great things and somewhat saddened things coming up at the university. All of us will miss John being in his office there, but I'm sure he'll still be a vibrant part of the Juno community.
Oh, yeah.
Katie, thank you, as always, for coming down and keeping us posted. Good opportunities for signing up for spring classes. When is registration?
So, registration is happening right now. And let's see here. So classes begin January 12th.
Yeah.
And it looks like if you are registered, your tuition and fees are due by January 7th.
Right.
So if you are interested, you want to register right away.
Indeed. So get out to the campus or get online to the online registration.
Oh, and I should also let people know that if you can all come out to the campus to the registrar's office, and they are open 8 to 5:30 Monday through Thursday and 8 to 5 on Fridays. Their phone number is 796-6100. But also, the campus will be open through next week through the 19th of December.
Mm-hmm.
And then, will be closed until the 5th of January.
Yeah.
So, actually, no, wait a minute. Sorry. I'm on my own schedule. We'll be opened through the 23rd of December.
Okay.
And they'll be closed from Christmas Eve.
So the day before Christmas.
Yes.
Okay.
It'll be closed from Christmas Eve, the 24th, through the 4th of January, open again on the 5th of January.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're planning a trip.
No, just a little time off.
Oh, okay. Well, you certainly deserve it with the work you do. Thank you so much, Katie, for
coming
down.
Thank you, Pat.
Filling us in.
Oh, I wish I were a real Alaskan girl. I wish that I could hold my beer. I could wear hip waders in summer and heels at 10 below. I'd have sexy woolly legs with long and flowing frozen hair. Oh, to be a scow girl in the last frontier, where chicks run the Iditarod and win it. Oh, I could ranch on my own goose, and I would jerk my own moose, and I'd drive a huge domestic truck and actually haul stuff in it. A little less sugar, a little more spice, a whole lot of fire and even more ice. From Kotzebue to Ketchikan, from Dead Horse to Etchew, Alaskan chicks can teach a city girl like me a thing or two. Oh, I wish I were a real Alaskan girl, because I hear that they kick ass. Oh, it's easy to see why a local woman's in demand. The guys have to queue up for years to get a chance to hold your hand. I'd find me some big burly bush pilot boy. I would hook and reel him in and fiance him. But if he ever double crossed me or tried to do me wrong, I wouldn't hardly hesitate to skin, gut, and fillet him. I'd shoot more than a camera at the animals and such. I'd eat Rudolph for breakfast and Bullwinkle for lunch. Oh, Alaskan girls are fearsome and fearless by design. They kill mosquitoes with a look and mess the trusting tourist minds. They're ruggedly handsome in their way. They're wild and free and meant to be that way. So from Jackalope to Juneau,
raise a glass to a proud and confident and deserving Alaskan woman, you know. And from Beaver to Tatidlik, here's to ladies who understand that their self-image should have nothing whatsoever to do with their shade of lipstick. Oh, I wish I were a real Alaskan girl, but when it comes down to it, for most of us, Los Anchorage is gonna have to do it.
It is 19 and a half minutes after 3 o'clock. My next guest, it's an honor to have Ishmael Hope here, as always.
Thank you.
And Ishmael is going to be honoring us by introducing us to a new collection of poetry that he has just come out called, now, I want to know if you use the French pronunciation or not. It would be Courtesans of Flounder Hill. If
yeah, that works.
Oh, okay, good. All right. All right. Okay. First of all, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And secondly, why the title?
Well, I don't want to. It was kind of a whimsical title. I don't want to take anything away from, you know, any other cultures. I was just inspired by Chinese and Japanese poetry. You know, so sort of the courtesans, and just the idea that there are a lot light. There's life and spirit everywhere. And now here in Juneau, though I've grown up here, it's not my land culturally as a clan, but I'm just I had this personal close relationship with Johnny Marks, who explained how this hill over Basin Road is called Zunti, a flounder, mm-hmm. you know, so that's like Flounder Hill. And so I was just being inspired by that, but again, not wanting to, it's a light touch because it's whimsical, but it's not trying to claim anything over anyone.
Okay. I think this may be one of those examples where someone will eventually tell the author what he really meant.
Yeah. There's nowhere in the book that explains the
title. Well, that's the ideal way. Then you leave it behind you, and some English teacher tells the class eventually what you really meant, and you're in great shape. How many poems are available to us?
I guess there's 43. Amy Fletcher, who did this wonderful article in the Juneau Empire, she counted. So I didn't know that until
that's the
I read.
First time you knew.
Yeah.
So how does one produce a book of poetry? I'm curious what the process is. I mean, you assemble the poems, and then what do you do? Just put them in an envelope and send them off to the publisher?
Well,
did you take an active part in
this? This was a close, long collaboration with Carla Blank, who is a renowned dancer, powerful artist in her own right, and the wife of Ishmael Reed, who I'm named after, a prominent black writer in the Bay Area who really promotes multicultural literature, and that's how he was connected with my parents. So it was a long process. Since 2009, I sent them a manuscript, and it's been super changed since then. I was just figuring out what I was trying to do, trying to get out poems that, you know, maybe after a couple of days you look at it and you say, oh, that's terrible, you know, and you want to throw it away. But then you look at it 6 months later, and it sticks. It connects. And so it was a lot of that. And then sometimes you have something in there that just – rhythmically, it needs to be there, but it's just kind of filler. And you can add some, you can alter that line, but maybe that'll only come to you 2 years later. So it was just really trying to settle, feel centered, feel, and have a lot of flavors and feel, to me at least, intuitively like it's radiating some kind of vitality and life. And once I felt like it got to that point, which was a lot of false starts and stops with Carla, working with her, and she put up with it, you know, she put up with it. But she, we eventually got to a point where we were just ready to get that book out there. So,
Ishmael, when you were talking about the fact that your parents named you after Ishmael Reed,
mm-hmm.
And your parents, your mother was Tlingit, right?
My mother was Inupiat.
Inupiat.
And my dad Tlingit.
Dad was Tlingit. Okay, yeah. I got it. Okay, so you came into the world then as the as a product of two really very disparate parts of the native culture of America,
mm-hmm.
and In the newspaper article that we all read this last week on the arts section, you said some things in there about the fact that there was a period of your life when you didn't really want to take cognizance of your nativeness.
Yeah.
And then that changed. And I'm interested in two things. One is, why did you shy away from it?
Mm-hmm.
And the other is, what brought you back?
Well, I think anyone who comes out of a Native community, first off, it's like we have embedded, internalized knowledge that no one could take away from us, an identity. No matter what we choose, how much we choose to take it on, it's there. And so sometimes we get sort of stereotyped as trapped between two worlds and ashamed of your, you know, and that shame certainly can be there. And that's something that we ourselves, we can work through. And so that's what I had since, you know, as a teen, just because it was not popular. It was not cool. It was not all right to be Native. There was a lot of, you know, outright racism, you know, mm-hmm. all over, everywhere I looked, looking down and constant badgering, negative treatment, comments, about Native people. And so I took that in, you know. And so, of course, there was a lot of shame associated. And not only that, over many generations, you know, at least three or four generations where our community has been dealing with that. And so I didn't take it on full force, but it was still there. I actually was still talking about Native community, Nancy Seamount's class, freshman health teacher. We always talked about social justice, and we always talked about communities of color and representations of culture. So that was always there, but still, I just wanted to play basketball and fit in for so much mm-hmm. of the time. But it was really just later on. My mom passed away when I was in high school. She gave that so much to me, and then it was pretty much after that. That I wanted to carry on her legacy. She was a wonderful poet. Sister Goodwin was her pen name, Elizabeth Hope. And my dad, Andy Hope, he was also a published poet. He was a recognized poet, a Thlinget poet, and an activist. And just their inspiration and them bringing me out into the community. And really, it's an extremely supportive community. I mean, as getting this book out, it's been amazing. So there can be those harsh sides of racism that's still there. But, you know, once I really did start getting confidence in Native culture, I found many places that just totally just embraced me, you know, and they still do.
This is the ideal time for you to read that poem you brought.
All right. This is called Silt. There were grinning faces, sitting in stiff chairs, cajoling me to get up in front of the auditorium. There was a master of ceremonies who skipped over my turn to speak. There were the loudspeakers in the other room. There were people my age adopting me as kin, making jokes, choosing mates like cards, spreading clothes on the floor. There were the speakers, drifting a grave voice down the hall. The voice of a white-haired man, the gravelly voice of a man who's been hurt, who has listened to the embers of many lives. I walked down the hall, and the man turned his head in my direction. "The heart is a silt jar," he said. "Dig your hands in it, spill it in the ocean, let out the buried ghosts, give it air, give it blood. This is the way strangers come in. This is the way to step outside your home. This is the way things become known, as the silt tips out of the jar, as the bottom works its way to the open air."
Does a silt jar have an identity? Is that you know, something that I would find in a home?
You know, this was like just like conceiving the heart as a jar of this fine-grained silt that just comes and just crunched out of the earth from the glacier. Mm-hmm. And I actually didn't think of any of this. It came to me from a dream. I mean, mm-hmm. This was an actual dream I had. It's funny, you know, to write about your dreams, that, you know, that could be totally hit or miss. But in this case, it was just so clear that this was all happening, and it was really just me documenting this dream. That was somehow this insight that was somewhere in my consciousness, and I was just trying to find access to it.
I want you to read the last part of it again.
Sure.
From the old man.
"The heart is a silt jar," he said. "Dig your hands in it. Spill it in the ocean. Let out the buried ghosts. Give it air. Give it blood. This is the way strangers come in. This is the way to step outside your home. This is the way things become known, as a silt tips out of the jar, as a bottom works its way to the open air."
You have to hear it twice. You do. I mean, it's like, I can't think of a specific example, but there are times when you have a movie on DVD,
mm-hmm.
and something happens in it, and you realize, after you've gone away and the movie's over and like that, you realize that you're going to have to go back and watch a scene because there's more in there than mm-hmm. than you could possibly catch on one viewing. And so you say to yourself, okay, so I got to watch this movie again, you know, and it's same thing with books. Sometimes when I'm reading a book, I'll read through the thing because I'm kind of caught up in the story and like that. And then 2 days later, I'll be thinking to myself, no, I really got to go back and figure out what the heck was going on in chapter 13 because it's not making sense to me at this point, and I need to figure out why the rest of the story happened after that.
Well, that's exactly the kind of vitality that I'm talking about. It has multiple flavors and senses and thoughts, and it's not just intellectual. It's just the whole body, you know. And it's our intelligence of our whole body that somehow we're all trying to communicate. And I think that is somehow connected with poetry and its relationship to the environment and to the land around you.
Every time you're on here, I wish this was a one-hour show. But it's not. So we need to make sure that everybody understands that you will be at Kindred Post.
Yes.
And that there's quite an event around this, by the way. You're having Nora Dauenhauer is coming in.
Yes.
And Chrissy Nami Erickson is going to read as well.
Yeah.
And you, there's going to be a photographer, and this is at the new thing that Kristi Nami Erickson has put together down where the old post office was.
Yeah,
kind of catty cornered from the bookstore.
I couldn't feel more supported just to be with Kristi and Nora and to read with them, and then our friends are bringing things for people to eat and drink, and it's a community supporting, wrapping its arms around this, and so it's just very special.
Courtesans of Flounder Hill and the book release party with readings by Ishmael Hope, Nora Dauenhauer, and Kristi Nami Erickson will start at 4 p.m. on Sunday, and it's right downtown. Find the blue clock and turn right, and you got it. It's right there on the corner. Okay, hey, thank you so
All
much
right.
for coming in.
With cheese, thank you.
We got to do this. Sometime we got to sit down and do this thing for a while longer. Always good talking with you.
All right.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 12th of December, 2014. It's the birthday of Gustave Flaubert, 1821, Rouen, France, the perfectionist who said, "I spent the morning putting in a comma and the afternoon removing it." He spent 5 years writing Madame Bovary, came out in 1856, the story of Emma, doctor's wife, dissatisfied with her life, wants to experience the passion and excitement and luxury she's only read about in novels. She has two long-term love affairs. She mounts up insurmountable debt and ultimately takes her own life with arsenic. In Chapter 9, Madame Bovary, he wrote, "Deep down in her heart, she was waiting and waiting for something to happen. Like a shipwrecked mariner, she gazed out wistfully over the wide solitude of her life. If so be, she might catch the white gleam of a sail away on the dim horizon. She knew not what it would be, this longed-for bark, what wind would waft it to her, or to what shores it would bear her away. She knew not if it would be burdened with anguish or freighted with joy. But every morning, When she awoke, she hoped it would come that day. The book was banned by the government, and they hauled Flaubert up on charges of offending public morality. He was narrowly acquitted, and Madame Bovary was published in book form 2 months later, and the scandal of the trial was only great publicity, contributing to its success. Flaubert wrote, "It is a delicious thing to write, to be no longer yourself, but to move in an entire universe of your own creating. Today, for instance, as man and woman, both lover and mistress, I rode in a forest on an autumn afternoon under the yellow leaves, and I was also the horses, the leaves, the wind, the words my people uttered, even the red sun that made them almost close their love-drowned eyes." It's the birthday of the painter Edvard Munch, born in Luton, Norway, 1863. His mother, his favorite sister, both died of TB when he was a boy. His father and brother died as well. Another sister went mad. Munch wrote, "I inherited two of mankind's most frightful enemies, the heritage of consumption and insanity. Illness and madness and death were the black angels that stood at my cradle." Most famous painting, of course, was The Scream in 1893. He had a nervous breakdown. Munch gave up drinking. His life settled down, but his later paintings lacked the intensity of his earlier tormented ones. And it's the birthday of the playwright John Osborne, London, 1929, who wrote Look Back in Anger, wrote it in less than a month in 1956, trying to portray the harsh reality of working-class life in England. Here's a poem for today by Tom Hennen, Love for Other Things. It's easy to love a deer, but try to care about bugs and scrawny trees. Love the puddle of lukewarm water from last week's rain. Leave the mountains alone for now, also the clear lakes surrounded by pines. People are lined up to admire them. Get close to the things that slide away in the dark. Be grateful even for the boredom that sometimes seems to involve the whole world. Think of the frost that will crack our bones eventually. Love for Other Things by Tom Hennen, from Darkness Sticks to Everything, published by Copper Canyon Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting Juneau Afternoon today. My next guest has a really exciting and interesting new shop that's opening up here in town, a boutique. But this is a different boutique. It's called Fiddleheads and Ferns. The lady is Michaela Levy, and I'll let her tell you a little bit about what is the unique nature of this shop.
Thanks, Pat. So Fiddleheads and Ferns is a natural parenting boutique here in Juneau. We opened up in October and are just now getting our feet on the ground and having a grand opening party tomorrow, which is pretty exciting.
So where are you located?
We're located next to the bowling alley downtown. So if you're facing the bowling alley, to the left of the Taku Lanes is a teal building. And there's a big sign, you can't miss it, says Fiddleheads and Ferns.
Fiddleheads and Ferns.
Mm-hmm.
I like the title.
Yeah.
They both being ferns.
Right. Well, the idea is that a fiddlehead is a baby fern.
Okay.
Grows up.
And grows up and spreads out.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, this is, you're dedicated kind of to the idea of natural birth.
The idea of natural parenting and... organic, eco-friendly products.
Okay.
So I really strive to bring products to Juneau that parents are already searching for that maybe they can't find in Juneau, and so instead they're going online and having to have products shipped in. And so the whole idea behind Fiddleheads and Ferns was to bring those products locally so that more parents had access to them.
And I can remember when we were outside when we had babies, and there were services. You could actually hire someone who would deliver cloth diapers to your home and pick up the old ones and take them off and wash them like that. Is that, are you planning on opening a diaper service?
Maybe long term, not anywhere in the future, but maybe sometime later on after we really sink our teeth into our business plan.
But one of the interesting things about your company is that you are actually going to be offering cloth diapers and classes in how to put them on the child without sticking the pins in the baby thing.
So we offer a wide array of different cloth diapers and cloth diaper accessories. And starting in January 21st, will actually be our first Cloth Diapering 101 class held at the store. And we will kind of do a rundown of all the different styles of cloth diapers that there are available, how to use them, how to put them on your baby, what to do with the poop, how to wash them.
Most people find it a mystery. I can envision young parents who really have no idea because they probably never had them themselves.
Right.
And their parents probably don't know how to pin on a cloth diaper.
Yeah.
It's an interesting
thing. Cloth diapers, over the years, they've really evolved. And you don't have to do the pre-folds and pins anymore. They've become much more modern and a lot easier to use.
Huh.
The daunting part is there's so many choices now, and so narrowing it down to a style that works for your family and a system that works for your family is probably the hardest part. And it can be really daunting thinking about having to add an extra wash cycle into your week, being a busy parent. But after going through my class, my hope is that parents will understand cloth diapering a little better and that jump will feel a little less scary.
Now, you come to the stage here with quite a bit of experience. You're a certified doula.
I am.
You want to explain that term?
Sure.
There are people who probably never heard of it.
So doula is a Greek word for servant, and a doula provides non-clinical care for pregnant women, and I do informational, emotional, and physical support. So I do prenatal care where I do childbirth education and build a relationship with my clients, and then I attend their births, and I'm there continuously throughout their labor and stay postpartum, help with breastfeeding and newborn care questions. And then what I think is the coolest part about my job is I get to come into their home postpartum and help with newborn care and breastfeeding.
And hold the baby.
And hold the baby. Yeah, really is the best part.
Which is why you got into this in the first place, right? Let's be honest here.
Yeah. And I think that it's such a cool part of my job because new moms, they don't want to get out of the house. They don't want to go anywhere. And so being able to come to them is just... it's so great.
And maybe run around the corner and pick up the groceries or something like that.
Definitely.
The servant part is wonderful.
Definitely.
It's an exhausting process.
It is.
And immediately after for the first, oh, say, 4 years or so, there'll be no sleep.
Right.
So having someone who can do a few errands isn't a bad thing at all.
Right.
So it's a wonderful service that you provide.
Yeah.
Well, Fiddleheads and Ferns is having a grand opening. Tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yep, from 10 to 5. We'll have kind of an open house.
And what can we expect to find at this open house?
Yeah, we'll have a few different giveaways going on. We're going to give away some fun products. Notable are from The Honest Company, which is a new product line to Juneau. We're the only place in town you can find them. They make eco-friendly disposable diapers, as well as they have a great baby care line and a home care line that has dish soaps and hand soaps and laundry detergents that are all just great for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
We have a new toy line that's Grimm Toys from Germany. They're great wooden toys, and we'll be doing a giveaway for them as well. We also will have prizes. You come in and make a purchase, draw out of the hat, and there are some prizes you can win, or you can win a discount off of your purchase. My good friend Jen Walker, who has Barefoot Walker Photography, is also going to be doing holiday mini photo sessions during the grand opening. You can either call her to schedule an appointment at 500-8929 or she's doing drop-ins from 10 to noon and 3 to 5.
Outstanding. This sounds like
a
wonderful thing for any new parent.
And grandparents.
Grandparents. I was just going to say it. And people who are having to help out with the after postpartum care and all that sort of stuff. Come down and find out a few things that can make it even more exciting.
Definitely. Okay. We've also just started offering baby registries. So if you're pregnant, come down and register. Tell your friends about us so they can come and shop local.
Okay. How do people get a hold of you if they have questions?
They can call me at 957-0598.
Okay.
They can email me at info@fiddleheadsandferns.com, or they can visit our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/fiddleheadsandferns, and that's where I do all my product announcements and event announcements. It's a great resource if you're hooked into Facebook.
Okay, Michaela Levy, it's Fiddleheads and Ferns. They're next door to the bowling alley, and the open house starts tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, right?
Yep.
Outstanding. Drop by the open house, folks.
Who's to say?
Join us for the live recording of Alaska Originals featuring Marion Call. With music once described as acoustic joy jazz, Marion will play a two-part concert including original favorites and a special set of holiday music for people who are tired of holiday music. Marion will be accompanied by Laura Zahasky, and the show starts at 7 p.m. on Thursday, December 18th at 360. Tickets at ktoo.org.
I am a storyteller. My life is a story. My history, my culture, my actions are all part of my story. You are a storyteller too. If you or someone you love is a victim of violence or is acting violently, we can change your story. We can stop the violence. Asking for help changes everything. Call your local shelter or free 24-hour crisis line. We all Alaskans choose respect.
Brought to you by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
Sounding thing doing Beatles music is a koto, which is a Japanese multi-stringed instrument, and it's from an album called Koto that does the Beatles. So my next guests are here to tell us about an event which is coming up. I have Pam Leary, Lori Balstad, Josephine Zulo, and Emily Bowman here, and we are talking about the holiday skating recital. I'm assuming that everyone in the studio is going to be skating in the recital.
I guess technically I will be skating, but I'll be the MC. I'll have the microphone, I'll have my skates on, and I'll be introducing all of our skaters for the Juno Skating Club annual holiday recital. It is this Sunday, December 14th at 2:30 at Treadwell Arena.
Okay.
It is free. It will last for about an hour. We're going to have a wonderful dessert auction, as well as some lovely items that were handcrafted by our skaters, like ornaments that are of skaters, which are really fun. And we'll have a hot chocolate bar. And all of that is for basically a fundraiser for our program to keep our costs down for our skaters. And this year, for the first time, our holiday recital is going to include our basic skill skaters.
Huh?
So that'll be fun. We usually, in the springtime, have the basic skill skaters skate with us, but this year we decided that we have done this enough times that we can get those basic skills skaters out for the holiday show as well.
However, the ladies you brought with you are beyond basic skills.
They are. Mm-hmm. They are figure skaters. And
okay.
So Lori Balstead will be doing a solo, and the other two lovely ladies here will be doing a duet. And Lori, why don't you tell us what your program's going to be?
Well, I'm skating to What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong, and I'm basically skating. I don't know exactly what's special, but yeah.
So I have a couple of questions. Did you choose your music, or did
yes,
your coach choose
always,
it for you?
Yes, I'm, uh-huh. I'm very picky about music.
Okay, okay.
And actually this year, most of the holiday recital numbers, the figure skaters choose their own music. They choreograph their own programs. It's kind of like their gift to the community. So it's something very special from them that they want to show everybody.
Okay. I want to talk about the duet, but then I want to come back. I got a couple of questions for you. So now, this duet, what are you dancing to, or what are you skating to?
We're doing Jingle Bell Rock, and yeah.
We're trying to make it a parody of the one that they did in the Mean Girls movie.
Okay.
Anyone seen that?
Okay. And you, is that the source of the idea? Is that what you were
yeah.
sitting around saying,
yeah.
hey, we ought to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when the two of you work together like this now, you have to find time to practice together, obviously. And
yeah.
then how do you work together? In other words, when you've got a big arena, you've got the whole thing, you've got the music. So how do you put the two of you together on skates? I mean, I can see it if you were dancing with a partner. You'd be in contact with each other, but you're going to be doing other things. So how do you go apart and come together like that?
Well, there are a few different ways. Mostly it's just synchronization in our main elements, which are our jumps and our spins and our footwork. But if we wanted to, we could skate side by side or, like, have one arm around a waist or something and do, like, a dance position.
Mm-hmm. So, now, do you have a coach?
We have different coaches. My coach is Pam, and Emily's coach is Debbie, but they kind of, like, both coach us on this program.
So, when you're doing a duet, the two of them are working together with you?
Yeah.
So, does Debbie give you pointers and Pam give you pointers? Did the two of you, did the two alternate coaches come into the discussion?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
And we only give pointers, really. This is their special program for everybody. And uh-huh. so all the moves that they're doing, they really created and, are choreographing to the music.
Okay, so now a quick question about the solo. There are a lot of mechanical things that can be done to a piece of music, but a real routine requires that you blend those into something which becomes artistic. So is that the case? Am I describing the process? Am I getting there?
I think so. What I think about more than anything is just the way that the music sounds and the way that it makes, like, it affects me and the way that it makes me feel. So when I'm thinking about, like, where do I want to put a jump, I think about, like, where the music gets exciting or where it kind of crescendos. So I do focus a lot on the mechanicals, but I also look at the artistic value of the music.
This is not something that you just sit down and start doing. You didn't hang this thing together last week. I'm curious about the length of time that it's taken the three of you to be ready to do this this recital.
Well, in general, with solos especially, it's pretty loose. So even though I choreograph something, it doesn't take me an overly long amount of time to choreograph, and then I'll be constantly modifying it and changing it and being like, well, I don't really want to do that. So I'll go back and I'll change it, or like I'll be like, oh, well, I just learned this jump, so I'm going to put that in. So really it's just a very big fluctuating process, and honestly, you probably could do it. You could put together a number in a week and have it be okay. But especially when you're doing something like a duet or a group number, you want to have that time to work with your partner and get something cohesive.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, show programs tend to be a little bit more fluid, a little bit more free. Competition programs are more practiced with every move, even connecting moves, going into jumps and spins, very specifically decided and practiced much more. But also, I should mention that both Emily and Josephine just came back from a competition in Whitehorse.
Cool.
Five of our skaters just went there, and they have a program or a competition just like we do in February that includes kind of an interpretive component. And so you listen to the music three times, and you have to put a program together.
Wow.
And that's how they judge your ability to be creative with the music, listen to it, and put all of your elements together in a program that looks like it's been skated for a long time. So they've had a lot of practice doing that. We occasionally will do that at the rink for fun, because it is fun. But it really helps in the creative aspect of their development.
Yeah. Well, we get a chance to see a great deal of wonderful skating at 2:30 to Sunday, December 14th, at Treadwell Ice Arena.
Yes, okay. We do. Hope everybody
advanced
comes.
Tickets a good idea, or?
Nope, it's free.
Oh,
and
free.
Whoever first come, first serve.
First come, first serve. No.
And
show up a little early, get a good seat.
Yeah, the auction starts at 11 o'clock, and also there'll be Santa Claus, and there'll be photos with Santa at the end.
Okay.
You also might want to bring a blanket or two in case the rink feels a little bit chilly.
Okay, good advice. Good advice. Thank you so much for telling us all about this.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. As December days shorten, you may wonder where birds, including this Steller's jay and others, spend the long, cold nights. It might surprise you to learn that they are not snuggled into cozy nests. The only time of the year when birds sleep in nests is when they are incubating eggs or keeping their young warm. During the rest of the year, birds select a roosting spot. Often, they use the same roost night after night. Songbirds find a protected place to perch, sheltered from rain and safe from nighttime predators. Small forest birds, including this red-breasted nuthatch, may spend the night huddled together in tree cavities. Ducks float in protected bays. Woodpeckers, like this downy woodpecker, cling to vertical tree trunks. On these cold nights, birds fluff up their feathers for insulation and often hunker down over their bare legs and feet to keep them warm. Most birds can't tuck their heads under their wings to sleep, as we've been led to believe, but they do turn their heads around and poke their beaks under shoulder feathers to keep their beaks warm. You'll find 4 seasons worth of birds in the latest Birds of Bird Note calendar. It's available at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
About 3 minutes before 4 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting Juneau Afternoon today. My next guest is here to tell us about a really exciting thing that's going on here at KTOO. Christy Chambord is here.
Hi.
And Christy, we're in the middle of an auction.
We are. We just finished. We had our live event last Saturday on December 6th. Thank you to everybody who participated, especially all of the wonderful businesses that donated. And there were 10 items that we could not squeeze in. We did not have enough time in our little 4-hour window.
So these were not on the radio.
These were supposed to be on the radio, and then we could not get them in. So we have 10 items available from the auction, some really great items.
What are these 10 items?
Let's see. We have a gift certificate for Hearthside Books. We have mm-hmm. 2 gift certificates for Full Circle Farms.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very beautiful Jones Glassworks crab plate from Annie Kales.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lovely etching collage from Diana Anderson from Juneau Artist Gallery called Souls of Southeast. It's actually a really beautiful homage to the Extra Tough. We've also got, a dine-around gift certificate for Tracy's Crab Shack, Salt, Saffron, and McGivney's. It's $25 at each restaurant. I think that's 10. Is that 10?
I think it's close.
It's close.
Anyway, yeah.
But you can see all of this. We're testing something. We're running the post auction on Facebook. We're going to let people look. If you go to the KTOO.org page or the KRNN.org page, we've shared the event there. You can click on it and then go ahead and put your highest bid in the comment section. And then I'll be monitoring this throughout the weekend. And then Monday at 5 o'clock, whoever that last person is with the highest bid, they are officially the winner.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Well, so the auction is not over. It's still going on, like I said.
Still going strong.
Okay. Outstanding.
Yeah.
Oh, Christy, this is exciting stuff. Okay. So still a chance.
Still a chance.
Yeah. Go look on Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. KRNN.org or KTOO.org. Again, the event shared there. You could just click the link and go ahead and bid away.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, folks. This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We're also on a set of translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, we are at K276AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, it's K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9 and Excursion Inlet, Nicey Strait. KTOO is on K210AS. You hear it at 89.9 megahertz. In Juneau, you can also get KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau. We're on digital channel 871. Our sister stations, KRNN is on 872 and KXLO is on 873. And we're always online at www.ktoo.org, which I'm sure you can find some kind of link to that Facebook page and bid on the auction. Monday's show, Scott Burton will be hosting the African Literacy Project. Marion Call will come in. We've heard some music from her today. With a preview of her next week's concerts, Juneau Construction Academy's Wednesday information session, we'll talk with Kyle Farley Robinson about his Tuesday piano concert. So tune in and listen to Scott on Monday. This is KTOO. Pat Moore, been your host for Juneau Afternoon. Been a grand time. Stay tuned now because we are just in the throes of bringing in All Things Considered.
I think what the American people very much are looking for is some practical governance and the willingness to compromise. That's what this bill reflects.
The $1 trillion bill aimed at keeping the government funded.
It's Friday, December 20th.